Welcome to CSEK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CSEK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CSEK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CSEK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CSEK News online at smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio.
Today on CSEK News, last week, Enbridge retracted their application for an extension of their EA certificate for their West Coast Connector gas transmission pipeline. This was a pipeline that was originally proposed in 2014 by Spectra Energy and since bought by Enbridge. It was going to facilitate a LNG facility export terminal at Leelu Island that was proposed by Petronas. But when that was canceled many years ago in 2017, the pipeline still remained active and had a valid certificate. Now, the news last week that they are retracting their application for an extension of their EA has raised some questions about the pipeline industry here in northern BC and if it's actually viable to continue building these types of pipelines in the region. Today, we'll speak with West Coast Environmental Law Staff Counsel Gavin Smith, based in Smithers, who has been following this file for some time. We'll also get a word from MP Taylor Bacharach about what he thought of the extension proposal a few months back and what comes next for similar proposals in the future. Stay with us. We've been hearing about the West Coast Connector, Enbridge-owned pipeline, natural gas pipeline. They're looking for an extension on the approval that that pipeline received a few years back, also under a former owner. But there seems to be a lot of debate about whether or not it should get the extension or go back to the table and go under an environmental assessment that is a new environmental assessment since that pipeline had gotten its approval before. I guess from your perspective, what do you think about that project, and do you feel that it needs to be assessed under the new environmental assessment and not have an extension to the current certificate that it has?
This interview was recorded on March 20th.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Of course, because that's an intra-provincial pipeline, there's no federal impact assessment. This is an issue that is solely on the desk of the provincial government, and I know they take that responsibility really seriously. There has been a lot of water under the bridge when it comes to these pipeline proposals in the years since that particular pipeline received its environmental certificate. And part of that is the fact that British Columbia now has a new Environmental Impact Assessment Act. I think in some ways it makes sense to subject future projects to the most up-to-date assessment process. And the new process gives Indigenous nations a more active role in the assessment process, and so I think that's probably what the provincial government is weighing, looking at the views of the community. I've certainly heard from a lot of constituents who are really concerned and would like to see a more rigorous review done, given the number of years that have passed and given how challenging Coastal GasLink has been for a lot of folks. So we'll wait and see what the province's decision is on that one.
Does it, obviously these are on one way provincial matters, but obviously as a country as a whole, national issues. But this pipeline in particular would go to a new facility that the NISCA would partly own. But again, is it concerning that we're looking at one LNG project currently being completed and two others, including this one, the NISCA proposal, that might actually make our GHG emissions go up due to those projects? And
if that does happen, we will miss or not be able to meet these targets that we've set a couple of years ago as a country, national targets. Does it concern you that these are moving forward and possibly could kind of crush those ambitions to keep our emissions down?
That's certainly one of the big questions being asked. And I think that's a question not only relevant to the provincial government, but also the federal government, because, of course, Canada has federal greenhouse gas reduction targets that we're not on track to meet. And so, you know, the question is, how do we reconcile the math? How do we make the math work so that we're hitting our targets? And I think that's a question that is very much on the minds of the provincial government. Just last week, the province announced a new framework for energy projects and energy broadly when it comes to the climate plan and when it comes to different industrial proposals. There are still some unanswered questions, but I think you know, they seem very serious about ensuring that future development fits within the context of the Clean BC plan. So that's really good to see.
Okay, we'll leave it there.
Thanks, Dan.
That was Member of Parliament for Skeena-Bulkley Valley, Taylor Bacharach. Coming up next, my conversation with West Coast Environmental Law Staff Counsel, Gavin Smith.
So my name is Gavin Smith. I'm a staff lawyer at West Coast Environmental Law and based in Gitumden Clan Territory of the Wet'suwet'en Nation here in Smithers.
Great, Gavin. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. Of course, as I mentioned earlier to you, we got some news last week where the West Coast Connector, a Enbridge pipeline, gas pipeline, LNG pipeline that has been proposed for some time, recently had a request to extend their certificate well into the future. But last week we heard that Enbridge had retracted their application for this extension on their certificate. And so we wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what possibly brought that on and what this means for the project. But first, maybe you can give us a brief outline of the history of this pipeline. When did it start and where exactly would it have gone if it was to move forward?
Sure. So the West Coast Connector Pipeline was originally approved in 2014, so it underwent an environmental assessment process over a number of years prior to that. It was owned by Spectra and was sold to Enbridge within the last number of years. And it was going from northeastern BC to the coast. Of course, there isn't an LNG facility constructed where the pipeline would currently be going to. So there was a number of uncertainties around the practicalities of the project, but specifically the reason it sort of rose in prominence in the last number of months is that Enbridge made a request for an emergency variance of the Environmental Assessment Act to allow it to extend its approval for another 5 years. So this project did get an extension to its approval after its five-year expiry. I believe that would be in 2019. And so its current approval is set to expire in 2024. By law under the Environmental Assessment Act, you're only allowed to have one extension. And so that is why Enbridge has requested an emergency variance of the act to get an additional extension, i.e. a second extension beyond 2024.
All right. Yeah, that's perfect. Now, originally when it was proposed, what facility was this supposed to go to?
There's been so many of the facilities now that have been proposed and closed. I actually don't even remember off the top of my head what the original facility was called. Was it Petronas?
I believe so, yeah. So it was Petronas that was originally proposed on Leelu Island, which is just adjacent, just south slightly of Prince Rupert. And obviously, Petronas out of Malaysia, they pulled out of that project. So that kind of died and it left this pipeline kind of hanging there. And so the question has come up about, you know, what's the validity and maybe even the legalities of allowing a pipeline company, when there is no facility to attach the pipeline to just kind of sit idle, waiting for something to come up. What are your thoughts and your take on that? Because I know this has come up before.
Yeah. So what is legally required in order to, well, I guess maybe one thing that I should say is how the Environmental Assessment Act works is you are required to get what is called a substantial start in order for your environmental assessment approval to be basically locked in into the future. So your approval will expire if you do not commence a substantial start before the expiry deadline. And that is what Enbridge is currently facing for the West Coast Connector. When a proponent does complete a substantial start of the project, then its approval is basically evergreen. It's sort of lasts indefinitely. And so an obvious problem for commencing a substantial start of a pipeline project that does not have a destination is, well, the practicalities of actually putting the pipeline in the ground when there's nowhere for it to go. And I think, really recognizing the reality of the practical challenges that presents, there's a lot of reason why it would be very difficult for Enbridge to get a substantial start determination of its project when there isn't an actual terminal for the project at this point.
Yeah, no, I get it. And it seems like, you know, hearing that news generated some interest and some thought around, oh, hey, this pipeline still exists. This idea is still on paper. But obviously, them pulling back is a signal that there isn't anything official and anything concrete moving forward. There are a couple of other LNG facilities that are proposed that seem to be moving through the motions at the moment, one up in Nisga territory, another one down in Kitimat, but nothing in particular for this specific pipeline to go to. Now, there was another thing that had come up. You mentioned, you know, years ago, there was lots of applications, lots of proposals for these types of pipelines in the region. And there was at one time a challenge of the validity of the jurisdictional approval that one of these pipelines got, and that it was challenged by the Canadian energy regulator that this pipeline should have been assessed under the federal government because it crosses provincial borders. But that didn't happen. Maybe you can explain a little bit more about, you know, how do these pipelines get assessed and what's the criteria that we have to look at being assessed by the province versus the federal regulator, which has a environmental assessment process that's a little bit more rigorous?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, from a jurisdictional standpoint, both the federal and provincial governments in BC have environmental assessment regimes for basically pretty much any large pipeline that is going through British Columbia. It's going to likely trigger the provincial assessment process. But the federal process is engaged where there are aspects that are sort of integral to federal jurisdiction. So crossing a provincial boundary is an obvious one. There have been arguments made about export licenses internationally and so on. It's often the case that what will happen is a process called substitution. So it is possible for both the federal and provincial governments' environmental assessment processes to be triggered. And they operate a substitution process whereby BC can basically request for its EA process to be substituted, be the process, the environmental assessment process that is conducted, and the federal and provincial governments still make their own decision, but the process that is conducted, even in the case where a federal assessment is required, if there is substitution that happens, it is effectively the province's process with the federal government participating. And then based on that process, both the province and the federal government make a decision.
I guess one other thing for you, Gavin. Obviously, the company was, Enbridge in this case, was looking for a five-year extension. It would have taken their current certificate to 2029. So that's a pretty large window to make a decision to build, you know, another LNG facility. Also to see what happens with the markets, because one can only, at this point, one can only speculate as to why Enbridge pulled out of this. They didn't give a specific reason. But where do we go from here? This certificate is still active until 2024, November 2024. So what can happen next between now and then? And, you know, is there any way to improve these types of application processes, or a way for the public to have a bigger part in some of these? I know there was a comment period, but it seems pretty lax.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe two comments or a couple comments about that. One is that I do think that although this was a decision made by the proponent, Enbridge, to withdraw its application, I do think that there were a number of comments and submissions made by the public on this question of whether an emergency variance of the act should be granted to Enbridge. And I do think it is a victory for the public that this emergency variance request was withdrawn. I think it's important to emphasize here that by law, Enbridge was prohibited from getting the extension that it wanted because it already had, it got 10 years by 2024, it will have 10 years. And by law, it's only allowed one extension. So what Enbridge was effectively asking Minister George Heyman to do was to change the rules of the game under the Environmental Assessment Act based on what Enbridge characterized as an emergency. And it actually, it said there were two emergencies. One was COVID-19 and the other was a decision of the BC Supreme Court that many may have heard of in the Northeast called the Yahi decision, where basically the Crown was found to be violating its treaty obligations to Blueberry River First Nation by virtue of not dealing with the cumulative effects of its various approvals, including oil and gas approvals. And so that led to a pause or discontinuance in some permitting in that region. And so the reason I note that is that I think it's really important from a public interest perspective that it be very clear that it is not an emergency from the perspective of a proponent that a court finds that an Indigenous nation's treaty rights have been violated. If there is an emergency for anyone in that scenario, it is the Indigenous nation by virtue of their treaty rights having been violated. And so I think there was a lot on the table in terms of that decision potentially being characterized as an emergency for an industrial proponent that allowed it to bend the rules, if I can put it that way, of the Environmental Assessment Act. So I do think this was a really significant development that the withdrawal occurred. I think it's positive. There was concern about the type of precedent that could be set if these sorts of emergency variances were granted regularly to change what are clear rules under the Environmental Assessment Act. With that sort of upfront statement about the relevance of the withdrawal decision in terms of what can happen, as you note, there is still an EA certificate that is valid until 2024. But as we've previously discussed, what needs to happen in order for that environmental assessment certificate to be locked in is for the proponent to achieve a substantial start of its project. There are, as we've already discussed, some practical challenges with actually with doing that work. And so while it is legally possible for it to basically get an indefinite duration to its EA approval by doing that substantial start, there's a lot of pretty significant practical hurdles, both economic and simply the fact that there is no place for this pipeline to go currently that would pose some challenges to them getting their substantial start in the time available.
And I guess just quickly on that, if November 25th, 2024 shows up, there's no substantial project that's being built where this pipeline is going to go. They're not going to get an extension. What happens after that? If they did want to build a pipeline after that date in 2024, they'd have to go back to the drawing board, correct?
That's right. So if a proponent's environmental assessment certificate expires, they are free to propose a new project and commence a new environmental assessment. And I think one of the reasons and the rationale behind the fact that these approvals do have an expiry date is a recognition that facts change and circumstances change over time. And so the context in which the project was approved in 2014 is obviously going to be very different from what a regulator is going to be looking at in 2025, let's say, both in terms of obviously the, you know, significant climate impacts that we've seen over that time and the potential interrelationship of a project with that, as well as, you know, increasing recognition of Indigenous rights. We saw the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act being passed and so on. I mentioned the Yahi decision. All of those types of developments are relevant and they're happening in real time. And so when you have a project that has a stale dated approval and is looking to build on that, you know, more than a decade into the future, that's a real cause for potential concern. And so a proponent has a liberty to seek a new environmental assessment certificate, but it's gonna need to go through a new process based on the facts of today and also the new Environmental Assessment Act that was passed in BC in 2018.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Gavin Smith from West Coast Environmental Law, thanks so much for your time and your insight on this.
Thanks, Dan.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.